The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
TFA fam, welcome back in. It's been a minute. Took a little hiatus, but we are back. Senior Bowl just wrapped up. We went to the Rolodex and brought in the best in the business, Derek Brown, over at Fantasy Pros. You know, over there, he was down
can,
there.
Can we Mobile. Clip that? Can we clip that, Kev? Can I replay that on a loop? Can we? I just want to know if that can happen. I need that in my life.
Yeah. I'm gonna say it was AI generated though. But so you went down there, you did all the dirty work, got to watch these guys all week playing and such. So first of all, how was it? How was the trip?
It's good, man. I mean, look, I think it's my third or fourth year in a row going to Senior Bowl, and every year it gets better and better, man. Whether you talk about the experience for the players now, and I keep telling people this, I'm like, this is going to be one of the tentpole events of the offseason. Going to, especially this year with Jim Nagy being able to unlock getting juniors there and not just seniors, this event's going to keep growing and growing and growing and growing. Eventually, like, you know, we're going to have somebody of the ilk of Caleb Williams in Mobile and stuff like that. Like, whether it's next year, the year after that, you're going to get all these high-end prospects. And it's fantastic, man. The type of access you get in Mobile, whether it's getting to interview the players, watching them up close at practice and stuff, it gives you a different perspective about it. Like over the last 2-3 years, you know, where I've walked away, and I mean, Kev, Cody, y'all have heard me, like the Christian Watson year, I'd never shut up about him because I watched him ball his ass off in Mobile. Tank Dell, watching him do what he did. Puka Nacua, even though he left after one day. Like a bunch of these guys, or whether it's Damian Pierce, Tajay Spears, like these guys show out of these practices and they build that hype and that swell and stuff. And whether that carries them to improve the draft stock at the NFL draft, or you have a different appreciation for it. And there's a bunch of guys that we're going to talk about that after seeing them on Mobile, I'm either a little bit higher on. There's different parts of their games that I felt like they were able to show out that maybe didn't come across in the film or their usage in college. It's just, it's always a good time, man.
Yeah, so I guess let's just start with the quarterback position because I felt like there was like two sides of that where I hear some people talk like well about like Bo Nix and say that they liked him all. Then I seen other people say that it was a terrible showing and he didn't look good and he kind of confirmed a lot of things that you saw on film that he struggled with. Michael Penix sounds like he now could be like a third round pick. Mm-hmm. What did you, I guess for you, who were your biggest risers or were there any risers at quarterback and what your thoughts on those two? Because those two were kind of the headliners. It sounded like Spencer Rattler maybe had himself the best weekend of all the quarterbacks there as well in terms of the risers. But what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Spencer Rattler, if you're looking at the quarterback that helped himself the most as far as like draft stock and what we could see out of him as far as skill set, Rattler had easily the best week out of it. And for a guy that I walked into the process, and I don't dislike Spencer Rattler. You just have to understand what you're getting out of Spencer Rattler. Like, the tools are okay. They're not like, oh, amazing. He just has some of those moments where you're just questioning the decision-making. Some moments were on his film, and this transpired even in practices to where he has these YOLO moments, and you're just like, what in the absolute hell are you doing, dude? Like, so that's part of his game. Now, Can that be a plus in the sense of playmaking ability going outside of structure? Yes. The problem that is, though, is that like Spencer Rattler's decision-making kind of waxes and wanes. My best comp for him has been Gardner Minshew with a little bit better arm. You just sometimes you just you're literally watching him on the field or you're watching the film and you're like, why did you do that? And that's just part of his game, man. So I think he's a guy that really helped himself. And especially from the outside looking in, knowing some of the preconceptions from media and his history and stuff, you know, we can all remember like, you know, all the interview clips way back when he was, you know, balling out in college and some of the things he said or didn't say, things like that. He was so eloquent in all of his interviews, handled himself extremely well with the media. And I think that's part of the process, you know, and maybe that doesn't really move the needle as far as like we're talking about on-field play. But I think Spencer Rattler really, really helped himself as a guy that really probably saw him probably going in like the fourth, fifth round of the NFL draft as a developmental guy. I think he cemented himself into that fourth round conversation. Maybe a team loves him and takes him in the third round. That wouldn't shock me because we see more of these NFL teams taking shots on quarterbacks in the middle rounds, hoping to land on, you know, the next Tom Brady, Brock Purdy, whatever name you want to throw out there. But more NFL teams are doing this. I mean, we saw Jake Haener and other guys go in the middle rounds that I'm not saying they didn't deserve it, but we were surprised at the time. So I think Rattler had easily the best week. But I think as far as Bo Nix and Michael Penix, you could not have had worse weeks than either one of those guys. And I think with Michael Penix, like all of the hype and you can say the same thing for Bo Nix, all the hype and the talk of them being first round quarterbacks, neither one of those dudes are going to go in the first round in the NFL draft. And they shouldn't. They absolutely should not. So if I'm hearing anybody out there in the space talk about, oh, Bo Nix had a good week or he's still a first round quarterback, you can just blow that out the door, man. Like, just go ahead and because we must have been watching absolutely different practices because I adamantly disagree with all of that shit. Because Michael Penix, my big concerns when I evaluated him and I wrote up all my quarterback primers for Fantasy Pros, they're still live on the site, is that the arm talent's real, but you also look at a lot of these guys coming from these collegiate systems and there's a bucket of them specifically talking about Senior Bowl guys that you could put into this whole entire conversation. Joe Milton, Michael Penix, Spencer Rattler, and Bo Nix, as far as these guys that they were asked to operate in quick passing offenses, really like predetermined reads, three-step drops, get the ball out of your damn hand. And it's either I'm going to my first read or I'm scrambling or I'm throwing it out of bounds, or I'm checking down. And there's really not a fourth option of, oh, maybe there's a second read I should go to. Now, some of these guys have other, like, parts or pieces of the game, like especially Michael Penix. He has a late trigger, man. It's a slow trigger. If he's not getting the ball, like, it's three-step, boom, three-step, boom, three-step, oh, shit, my first read is covered. And then a guy crosses his face. Oh, wait, ooh, there's one. Pew. Like, outside of that, he's got some serious problems about processing and getting the ball out on time. And you saw those things transfer to Mobile for Michael Penix. Now you saw flashes of the arm talent. There were two throws that I can remember right off the top of my head. One of them was an over-the-shoulder throw to Malachi Corley in red zone. I think it was either red zone drills or maybe just 7-on-7, where you're like, oh, there's the arm talent. But outside of that, Michael Penix had a terrible week, man. And then he built upon the bad week by not even playing in the game because I think after the week, he was like, I've pretty much hurt my draft stock enough for 1 week. I'm just going to sit that game out because if I crap my pants in the game, I'm really going to be screwed with my NFL draft stock. And as far as Bo Nix, terrible week, horrible week. You talk about a guy that's like an absolute system quarterback in college. If anybody watched Bo Nix at Auburn, that's the real Bo Nix. The Bo Nix you think you saw at Oregon is not the real Bo Nix. That is a system that was designed to make – basically, he's playing point guard, and all of his numbers say that. Whether you want to talk about his ADOT, his time to throw, one of the lowest deep ball rates in the entire class, or much less the country last year. So, but when Bo Nix was in Mobile and he's asked to do different things like, oh, read a defense. Oh, hey, challenge, go throw a 50-50 ball down the sideline. Bo Nix didn't do that. He literally challenged, it was him and Joe Milton on day two of who can complete the fewest passes. And people want to talk about, oh, well, Bo Nix had a really good day three and he did good in red zone stuff. I'm sorry. I don't give a shit about Bo Nix hitting a running back leaking out on a wheel route inside the 10. Like, Teddy Bridgewater can do that shit. I don't really care if Bo Nix can. That doesn't show me that he's going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. So if you're using that or other parts of the red zone drills to sit here and prop Bo Nix up because of confirming your priors on Bo Nix, then I'm sorry, but you're wrong.
Debra, so for dynasty rookie purposes for drafts, who's your QB four after the top three? And then, like, I guess in super flex drafts, like, when is like the earliest you would consider taking them? Now, obviously, we still have to get landing spot and draft capital and in this mix, but like, I guess just in general, where do you sit with QB four? Who is it? And like, when would you look to take them?
Man, I'm so glad you brought that up, Cody, because that's another point that I wanted to make during that entire, like, long-ass soliloquy I just had, was that J.J. McCarthy, who was not even in Mobile, has cemented himself as the clear QB4 in this class, a tier to himself. And I'm telling you all of this, and I haven't even watched J.J. McCarthy's tape yet. I haven't even broken him down. But because of the terrible week that Penix and Bo Nix had, they're not even in that conversation. Bye. See ya. See draft capital. I'll see you on maybe day two, possibly day three of the NFL draft. Probably day two. I'm not going to get too out over my skis. I think they're round two guys, and maybe some stupid NFL team takes one of them in the second round because that's what NFL teams do. But I think J.J. McCarthy is the only guy that's still in that type of first round conversation in Superflex rookie drafts. Outside of that, Bo Nix and Michael Penix, I'm going to avoid them like the plague. I'm going to bury them in my rookie ranks. I want people to take wide receivers, tight ends, whatever. Name a position. Any position. Take them over Bo Nix and Michael Penix. And the math on them gets even worse when you talk about just quarterback hit rates and the ability to get on the field, much less not even get a cup of coffee as a starter. But can you be a multi-year starter in the NFL if your draft capital is the third round? Can it be done? Sure, it can be done. But the other thing is there is a lot of stuff that needs to go perfect for a quarterback to outkick his draft capital and be a multi-year starter. And we've seen this how many different years, guys? I mean, pick your flavor du jour of the last few years. Gardner Minshew. Oh, he's going to be a thing. He wasn't. Oh, Davis Mills, he's going to be a thing. He wasn't. Who else? Let's pull out Sam Howell. He's going to be a thing for multiple years. He's not. It continues every single year. So if you do take those guys in Dynasty rookie drafts, they get the starting cup of coffee for that year, trade them immediately. And I look at both those guys as round three quarterbacks, so I'm avoiding them. Because that type of draft capital, good luck.
Well, I don't think there's anything else to talk about quarterbacks. I think we've buried them enough.
I mean, it was a bad week, man. I'm not going to blow smoke up their ass if they had bad weeks.
Right? It's the top three. It's the conversations, Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jay Daniels, right? So, yes, like, sir. I get it. Let's move over to the running back position where it might be hard to find, you know, a lot of positives with this position too, because, like, this is not the strong position that we're looking for, especially with how bad the running back position has been the last couple of years. We're kind of dying for, like, a really strong infusion of running back talent. And I don't know if this is going to be the draft that's going to do it, because there is no, you know, elite level Bijan Robinson. I don't even think there's a Jahmyr Gibbs level player in this draft. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe something will shake out. I'm sure there'll be some good players from here. I mean, I can't think of a draft where we haven't had some, like, usable assets.
There will be.
Yeah. At least from there, it sounds like Marshawn Lloyd is the one that really kind of separated himself and really had really did himself a really solid service down there. But who are the guys for you at running back that really impressed you? Is there an Evan Hall that we're going to be hearing about for the next 6 months that
You will in love with. You will. And Marshawn Lloyd is that dude, man. He looked freaking fantastic. And there's two guys from the Senior Bowl, and one of the guys wasn't even there, and he still was a fantastic winner in the sense of Jalen Wright. Jalen Wright didn't go to the Senior Bowl because he had wrist surgery, so he's rehabbing that, getting ready for the combine, all that kind of stuff. But if Jalen Wright would have been there, I'm telling you right now, he would have had a fantastic week. I freaking love Jalen Wright as a prospect. And Kev, I don't know if you've watched him or looked at all of his numbers yet, or Cody, if y'all have, but Jalen Wright's a guy that the closer we get, I think he's going to test well. I think you look at his analytical profile. Like, I mean, this is a guy last year who was fifth in yards after contact per attempt, 11th in breakaway rate, and 13th in PFF elusive rating. So the numbers are all there. Dude is, I mean, just shot out of a cannon. I can only wax poetic enough on a guy that wasn't even at Senior Bowl, but Marshawn Lloyd distanced himself from everybody at Senior Bowl. I think he had a wonderful week, and I think that he is going to be drafted in the third round of the NFL draft. He will go inside the top four rounds. If he does not go in round three, I'm telling you right now, he will go inside the top four rounds. The fourth round will not conclude without him hearing his name called. And a lot of this happens or has to do with the type of week that he had. So, like, Lloyd entered this process, like, you knew if you watched his film, the guy is a beast on the ground. He runs angry. Like, I got a chance to talk to him at the Senior Bowl, and I was, like, literally, like, I straight up asked him, I was like, who hurt you, man? Because you run, like, you got a chip on your shoulder. You run like you're ready to destroy the world. He's freaking fantastic. And what he showed, so that's a known part of his game, because literally over the last 2 years, he's ranked top 20 in both yards after contact per attempt, breakaway rate, and elusive rating in each of the last two seasons. So we know the tackle breaking ability that he has, but the question that he really answered to Mobile was, he is also a really good receiving threat. This is the reason why I'm pushing him up into the round three conversation in the NFL draft, is because we heard various people, whether it was scouts, stuff like that, I heard from multiple people down there, and I dismissed it when I first heard it, but then I heard it from multiple people. So you got to believe it after you hear multiple times, but that the coaches and the scouts down there wanted to see the running backs involved in the passing game and to see who could show out. And Lloyd did that, man. Like, it was either day two or day three, but he closed two consecutive practices with looking like a freaking stud in the passing game. He was dusting dudes in one-on-ones. He looked good on angle routes. He took a wheel route up the boundary and had a basket catch over his shoulder, and everybody in the stands goes, oh, shit. All right. Good job. Let's go. So Lloyd is easily – it's him, and then there's the whole rest of the pack of dudes. And there's other guys that look good that we could talk about there, but I really want to hammer on Lloyd as a guy that I will be trading into rookie drafts this year to draft Marshawn Lloyd.
Speaking of pass catchers, someone I was happy to see that I saw some people talk about as a riser, I liked what I saw on film from him and, you know, the limited game tape that I saw. And it was hard for me to, like, come away with, like, any, like, really strong feelings because of where he played. And that is University of New Hampshire's own Dylan Lobby, however you say his last Lobby. Name. But just any general thoughts on him? Like I said, he's someone I liked. I thought him with what he came in at the what he measured in at 5'9", 210, I thought that was encouraging for him. Like I said, it was hard to, like, really have any strong opinions whenever he's out there just busting heads against teams like Monmouth and Stony Brook. So just any general thoughts on Lobby?
I think Lobby had – I think – it was a good proof of concept week for him. I think he hit a ground rule double in the sense of, I don't think that he helped his stock like a ton in that he just proved that he is who he is to me, in the sense that I expected him to win in one-on-ones and look good in the pass game drills. And he did that. The part that I question about his upside, like, I have no qualms about it. Like, and I think he's going to step into the NFL and be a receiving back. He's going to be the receiving part of a committee. My thing about Lobby and the other things that like he didn't answer along the way was I don't think he's a three down back. And you talked about it, his profile, Cody. As good as he looked, he's still a one speed guy. He doesn't have a second gear. He doesn't have a home run gear. He's more quick than fast. And so for me, I mean, and some of these things I saw in his profile before I went there and when I wrote him up and when I watched his film, but he didn't show me anything on like whether it was early downs. And the good thing about this year in Mobile, and I can say this for being there multiple years, is that in previous years, the running backs were hard to kind of evaluate because you look at like the 7-on-7s, guys are just flailing. They're kind of playing flag football. They're touching guys like, you know, like as far as like, oh, here's your tackle. Okay, you're down. Play's dead. Like this year, you saw some guys kind of getting after it. And I'm not saying full on like, let's play, you know, round robin, like let's get in the ring and sit here and hit, knock the shit out of each other. Like that didn't happen. But you saw guys were actually tackling and stuff. And we were getting a little bit more of a sense of, okay, what is this guy's burst? Okay, can he get skinny? And you saw a little bit more out of the running backs. And for Lobby, I mean, as a guy that over the last 2 years, I don't want to get out over my skis over a guy that if amongst all FBS and FCS running backs with at least 100 carries, he's ranked 205th and 237th in yards after contact per attempt. So I think he is who he is. He's going to be a passing down back. And really, I didn't walk away like in love with him. But two guys that we could talk about, though, that, like, they changed my mind a little bit about. And, I mean, that was Cody Schrader and Ray Davis. Ray Davis had a really damn good week. And the thing, I didn't get a chance. I wanted to interview Ray Davis so freaking bad, but I couldn't find him at media day. I couldn't find him at the practice. I did not get a chance to talk to him. But if you turn on Ray Davis tape, and everybody knows, like, Ray Davis has been around for forever. You can go back and watch 2019. You go back and watch 2020. If you watch those years of film versus 2023, Ray Davis looked like a different dude. And whether that's, like, I think personally, and I got nothing to compare this against, but I think he cut weight. I think he got more serious in the weight room. And I really wanted to, like, pull him aside and ask him about this because – you look at his tape in 2019 through 2021, 2022, and he was a volume back. He was more of a grinder. I was like, I don't see a ton. And then I flip on 2023, and I'm like, oh, shit, this dude's got some burst. Like, he's got a little bit more of a second gear. Like, he's got some more shimmy and shake at the second level that, like, if you watch 2019, you didn't see that. And then he goes down to Mobile, and the dude's looking smooth in pass game drills. He's running routes. He looks pretty good there. He had a one-handed catch in 7-on-7 where I was like, oh, damn! Go, Ray! Woo! And so he's a guy that I think, like, vaunted himself from UDFA round 6 conversation to maybe he sneaks in round 5 now. And for me, like, you're just hoping for a chip in a chair as far as, like, on an NFL roster and giving him a chance to compete and go out and earn more snaps. I think Ray Davis really helped himself this week. And Cody Schrader was a guy that I definitively walked into Mobile lower than consensus on. And he did nothing but, I'm not going to say prove me wrong, but show me different parts and facets of his game in Mobile. He was, I'm not going to say that he was explosive or he was lightning fast, shot out of a cannon, anything like that. But Cody Schrader is smooth as butter, dude. Like, you, whether you're talking about his moves in traffic or getting downhill, gap runs, like diagnosing and having the short area agility to hit the right hole or to make something happen if the hole is not there for him, he showed that in Mobile, and he also showed that in the pass game. His routes were really good. They kind of surprised me for a guy that didn't come in with, like, this great receiving acumen, whether you look at just target share, receptions, volume stats, or yards per route run. He didn't have those stats. So really showing those things in Mobile. And the other thing I want to point out about Cody Schrader, seeing some of these guys up close, like in the sense of two guys off the top of my head that, like, just physically looking at these guys on the field, Tez Walker is rail thin. Dude looks like a freaking scarecrow. So him not being physical in routes, you're like, okay, now I see why. But Cody Schrader, that dude from the waist down is built like he's got like a thick freaking legs, man. He's got cankles. Like, the dude is absolutely just stacked. as far as like thick legs, where you're like, could we use this guy in gap runs or in the red zone and stuff? And I'm like, he's got tree trunks, man. Like, he's not a skinny little dude. He's short, he's squatty, and he's like, okay, can he churn out some of those hard-fought yards? And I'm like, I think he can now.
One last guy I want to hear about. I think he got injured on the first day, but whenever he has been healthy at Marshall, the dude just put up some pretty monster numbers. But what about Rasheen Ali? Like I said, obviously, I think it was the first day he got injured, but
yeah.
Just any general impressions on him from what you saw? Because what it sounds like, he was having a good first day before that injury.
He was, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was a ruptured bicep that they reported after.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and so... Yeah, he left. It was either after day one or he got hurt towards the end of day one. He was on his way to having a good week, at least from, you know, what you could take away from day one. But I thought Ali was basically, he showed a little bit more burst than I probably gave him credit for on film and things like that. His tackle breaking metrics aren't great. I don't think he's going to be a guy that tests extremely well, like whether it's raw speed or short area agility. So I think for what he was able to do in Mobile, he was probably able to open some eyes from NFL coaches, at least in the sense of, could he be a round six guy, not a UDFA guy now? I think it's possible. So I really hate that he got hurt, because I think he probably was on his way to having a much better week, and he could open my eyes more in that process. But from what I saw at day one, he had good moments, but nothing where I'm just like, you know, taking the cap off and tipping the cap to him. So, and by the way, Kev, do you have like a, you seem like you had to collect yourself a little bit after all the Ray Davis talk, or was it Cody Schrader? Then am I missing something here?
It was Cody Schrader. But I promise myself, I'm not gonna, he's a Mizzou guy. I'm not gonna.
Well, tell me, do you like Cody? Do you like him a lot? I mean, you tell me, what are your thoughts on Cody Schrader?
Yeah. I mean, I think that he's probably a day three guy. I think more than anything, I felt like, maybe he could carve himself out a role as probably, I don't want to say Danny Woodhead, because he's not that small, but
no, he's not that small, but he's thick, man.
I mean, I think the story overall, I mean, he has an awesome story about, you know, coming from where he came from, you know, and working his way and leading the team.
He was such a good interview, like listening to him talk. One of the guys at Media Day asked him, I forget even the question that the guy asked him, but his answer was absolutely fantastic. He went on this long, like, soliloquy about, like, if I want to get to where I want to be, then if I want to do special things in my life is not going to be normal. It's not going to be like everybody else's. I'm going to have to sacrifice time. I'm going to have to sacrifice friendships. I'm going to have to sacrifice sleep. I'm going to have to sacrifice all these things to get to where I want to be. And I understand that, and I'm willing to sit here and put in the time and the effort and the sacrifice to do the things that I want to do in life. And I was like, oh, shit, man. Like, you're dude, like, I want to see you freaking do well. I want to see a team take a chance on you. I want to see you get your opportunity, man. And so, I mean, he's a guy that, like, leaving Mobile, I'm actively rooting for. And I agree with you. Like, the one thing about Cody Schrader, like, entering the process after watching his film, I think coaches are going to love him. I think he's going to get drafted by a team in round five, round six, and coaches are going to freaking love him because he's so damn dependable and he's smart. You're not going to see him miss a hole. You're not going to see him miss a blocking assignment. Maybe he needs some technique and some work in pass pro at times and stuff like that. But he's a guy that you know is going to work his ass off, and 9 times out of 10, he's going to do exactly what he needs to do on that play, the blitz pickup, whether it's reading the right hole and stuff. He's going to get what's blocked, maybe a little bit more, and if he shows out a little bit more of the pass game utility, again, I think an NFL team, whoever drafts him, is going to freaking love him.
Yeah,
but he's no Tyler Beatty, is what I'm hearing.
Oh, jeez.
That's where it came from. Yeah. I talked myself
just to Tyler Beatty. Coming for the throat, Cody.
No, I'm not going to do it this year. With I'll do it next year. I'm saving it all for next year for Luther Burden whenever he comes.
Okay. Well, Luther Burden's probably a dude who's like, what, like going in like round two of the NFL draft. So, like, you're going to get the
hype. Luther Burden will be I think he's going to be a top 15, top 20 pick.
Here we go.
Yep.
There it is.
No, he's not wrong. He's not wrong. I'll give Kev shit when he's wrong. He's not wrong about this.
I mean, this isn't a Devy show, but like, he's the best wide receiver in the country right now, right? Now where we stand, I think he's the best wide receiver in the country.
We'll see. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to push back on you. I think he's good.
Anyways, all right. That's a good segue. Speaking of wide receivers.
Professional transitions here.
First of all, it sounds to me from everything that I've saw that Ladd McConkey, who, great name. Sounds something from the 1800s or something.
Sounds like some shit somebody made up just to be a football player. Like some kind of create a Madden player.
It sounds like he had himself a weekend.
Peaky Blinders character.
And then also Roman Wilson also came out and had himself a day and decided he's done. I don't need to do anything else. I've showed you everything you need to see. And I'm leaving. And so were they the two biggest, guys, that, or you felt like had the two best weekend of the wide receivers, or was there anybody else there for you?
I think that they're the two guys that had the best week. I mean, I think if you're looking at anybody's Senior Bowl ranks, how where they entered the process or even leaving that week, Roman Wilson and Ladd McConkey definitely early in the top three of that group. Roman Wilson absolutely just balled out on day one. I thought day two, you saw some more of the limitations of his game. He was asked to run perimeter routes, more in the boundary, whether it was go routes, double moves, things like that. I'm not going to say he got jammed up, but you saw corners were able to get their hands on him and gave him problems at the catch point. But that's not something I'm not damning him and you could say the same thing for Ladd McConkey, to be honest. Now, I think Ladd acquitted himself to the perimeter a little bit better. I think he has a little bit more nuance to his routes as far as using whether it's shoulder fakes, pacing, things like that. Different things in his routes were, I think he had more success in Mobile and he has a little bit more ability to play the outside versus Roman Wilson. But I don't want to take anything away from those guys. I think they both had fantastic weeks in Mobile. I think now, depending on what mock drafts you see out there, some of these mock drafts floating around because they're just now fresh off of Senior Bowl week have basically the entire Senior Bowl rosters in the top two rounds of the NFL draft. I don't think that's the case. I think Ladd McConkey and Roman Wilson are guys that probably, in the case of Roman Wilson, probably a round four guy that bumped up his draft stock to round three. I think Ladd McConkey's a round three guy. Maybe a team loves him and he's this year's Jaden Reed and he goes in round two. That won't shock me. I'm not projecting him there because as good of weeks as these guys had, and again, I don't want to take anything away from them because they both had really good weeks. And I think if you're looking at, yes, they were the standout winners of the week in one-on-ones, team drills, and things like that, we also have to understand that their profiles are not perfectly clean. Neither one of these guys have just standout profiles. Whether you want to talk about breakout ages, dominators, all that type of stuff, nerdy stuff that we care about and how we evaluate guys. Roman Wilson's still a guy that in 4 years of college didn't earn more than 39 targets or finish with more than 2.3 yards per route run until 2023. So that also has to be mentioned in how we're going to project into the NFL. These guys, I think, are going to be solid wide receiver threes for NFL passing offenses. The guy that I think probably has a little bit higher ceiling because of his overall skill set is Ladd McConkey. I could see him, if everything works out perfectly for him, maybe he develops into a wide receiver two and a slot option and a team gets creative with him. Could I see that? Possible. Is that where I'm putting his median projection and range of outcomes based off of not only his profile, but the week he just had? Probably not. But I mean, they definitely helped themselves and opened some eyes, this week, as far as if you're looking at who are the clear winners for Mobile.
So real quick, that was something I wanted to ask you, D-Bro, because I did see that there was a somewhat of an apology that was recorded and posted on Twitter from you about Roman Wilson. So it seemed like you were lower on him going into the week.
I was.
So how do you balance being lower on someone and then they come out and in this 3-day limited sample controlled environment they ball out like that? How do you balance how far you move them up versus being lower on them going into it? Because that was something that I didn't watch a ton of Roman Wilson before this, mm-hmm. and then I see all the hype about him. I went and watched, admittedly I've only seen two games, so there's still a ton more I could watch, mm-hmm. But I watched a Purdue game where he was literally just wide open the entire time, had over 100 mm-hmm. something yards. And then I watched a Rutgers game where you were saying, you know, like if DB's got into his frame, he had no answer for that. So like, how do you balance, like, because football is such a small sample size to begin with, and then you throw in something like the Senior Bowl that's a 3-day sample size. So just like kind of how you go about, I guess, balancing that.
I think so. For me, it comes down to, I'm not going to trash and throw an entire evaluation where I've watched 6 or 7 games on a guy and I've looked at his analytical profile. I'm not going to allow 3 days of practice and one-on-ones to make me just trash an entire eval. Now, when I watch a guy in Mobile, and there are varying levels of this too, and I can definitively tell you no wide receiver in Mobile this year had the type of week that Tank Dell had last year or that Christian Watson had when he went to Mobile. Nobody, and I will, nobody had that type of week where literally it was one-on-ones every single day. Cornerbacks are getting cooked on a just, I mean, every single freaking rep. Like Tank Dell last year, corners didn't want to freaking match up against him. They tried to put their hands on him. He got past him. They tried to play off him. He burned him underneath. They tried to get up and press him. He took the top off the defense. Nobody could stay with Tank Dell last year. And the same thing was true when Christian Watson was in Mobile. Nobody had that type of week. So it's varying levels of, not only are we matching up the type of week that they had in Mobile, but you match that to their analytical profile. And it's like, okay, like the profile is really damn good. Okay, this guy absolutely just smoked everybody in Mobile. Okay, you marry both of those things together, I'm going to be over the moon for the guy. But you also talk about, okay, well, maybe his analytical profile is so-so. He came to Mobile, he crushed. Then, okay, well, maybe I need to bump him up a tier or two, or maybe 2 spots in the ranks versus some other players that didn't do good. Or if we're bucketing the same type of analytical profiles, whether we talk about breakout age, yards per route run, what they've done over the last few years, all of these different parts or pieces, do I bump that guy up 1 or 2 spots, or is that a tiebreaker on how I'm ranking him wide receiver 8 versus wide receiver 10? That's the way I approach. I try to stay even keel with it, unless a guy just comes down there and just absolutely crushes, and he's got this over the moon profile where I'm just like, oh shit, well, you just got the whole package now, man. Like, now we're going to sit here and like, I'm not stopping the hype train, you know? So again, I didn't see anybody from Mobile, and there's 2 guys that I want to sit here and highlight, and I don't know if we were going to get to them or not, but Javon Baker and Johnny Wilson. And both of those guys, those are the 2 guys that I was hoping came to Mobile and just said, this is my week. You all sit in the stands and you watch me. This is my week. These are my practices. I'm getting the hype. Screw everybody else. It's my time. And didn't really see that out of both of them. Javon Baker had more of an up and down kind of week. There were moments and flashes where I saw a lot of the things that I've seen on tape. He has a really good profile. And I did see parts or pieces of why I'm so high on him. And I say high on him, like, I think he's got a really big upside if everything coalesces. But also, I have like a 3rd-round grade on him. I'm not going to go over the moon. I think he tests okay. I don't think he tests amazing. And Mobile, he was kind of up and down, like 2 or 3 of the days, like, or at least some of the reps, he would win, and you would see the short area agility, the nuance in his routes, and he's able to beat guys underneath. Other times, you would see they put him on the boundary, they ask him to run either a post or a go route up the boundary, and guys are hanging with him. But then he opens day 3 with a highlight reel catch.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Which is littered on through his tape for Javon Baker, high pointed a ball over a corner in the red zone. And you're like, all right, seen that before. I know what that looks like. All right, good to see it again. So that was proof of concept, but not a guy that I think blew it out throughout the week. And same thing you can kind of say with Johnny Wilson, and a player that I entered Mobile hoping to see him work with tight ends. He didn't work with tight ends. And I kind of see why, and this is not to say the guy can't play wide receiver. I mean, he's a freaking monster. Like, the dude's sick. He's literally got the dimensions as far as height and weight of Darren Waller. And he's got special movement skills. Like, a guy that is 6'6", 230, 240 pounds should not be able to move the way that Johnny Wilson moves. Now, some of the limitations of – or I'm not going to say limitations. Like, some of the parts of his game where you're like, okay – we probably shouldn't be asking you to do that, but you can do that in certain instances in the sense of like getting on the perimeter and stretching the defense and getting deep. Can he do that depending on the matchup? Yes. Is that something you want Johnny Wilson doing all freaking game and playing Mike Evans, you know, playing like being the Mike Evans? No, that he's just not Mike Evans. Like, he's got good movement skills, borderline. I'm not going to say special movement skills, but he does move really damn good for his size. The part where Johnny Wilson, and it was an incomplete evaluation because this still hasn't been reported anywhere, is that he was doing really, really well in day two in the one-on-ones to begin the day. He had an up and down day one, but day two, he opened with the things that I wanted to see out of Johnny Wilson. He was physical through his routes. He got guys tried to press him and he literally threw them off of him like rag dolls. And got open, and you saw speed and you saw short area agility that a man his size should not have. I mean, anybody can go to Twitter right now and pull up any film clip of Johnny Wilson and see exactly what I'm talking about. But he started off day two winning in one-on-ones and proving a lot of what I wanted to see in Mobile, and then he was a ghost. He didn't finish day two practice, and the best that I can come up with is that it was an injury. Now, what said injury was, I don't know. Nothing's been reported, nothing that I've seen. But he left in the middle part of day two practice, did not practice on day three, wasn't even out there suited up at all. And so I don't know what happened with Johnny Wilson. And the other part, and this is something specific to my experience in Mobile, is that Johnny Wilson, so the media breakfast or the media setup, basically where all the guys come in, you're able to go out and mingle through the room and talk to every player that's in there and talk to whoever you want to. Johnny Wilson was walking down the hall to the convention center where everybody was at and all the players were going and stuff like that, literally started walking down the hall. And I'm standing out there in the hallway trying to upload a video from the previous session. And I see Johnny Wilson because you can't miss Johnny Wilson. He's like the only dude that's like built, looks like a skyscraper walking down the hall in a freaking hoodie. And I'm like, oh shit, well good. I want to talk to Johnny Wilson. I'm going to ask him about what happened on day two. Is he hurt? Blah, 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 blah. And Johnny Wilson literally got halfway down the hallway, got stopped by somebody, then turned to 180 and took off the other way and never saw him again. Didn't see him on day three. Don't know what happened. I can only surmise him an injury, but I got nothing to report that's concrete that says he did get hurt.
He saw you and said, fuck this.
It could be. Could be. He saw, he's like, oh,
you're not,
geez,
not gonna, doing it.
I'm talking to that fool. Ugh, no way.
So
Kevin knows how that feels.
I was going to ask. No, go ahead. Go ahead, Cody. No, Cody, go ahead.
Xavier Leggett. Someone looked like day one from what I was seeing on Twitter. Just have potentially the worst day possible, but day two Had a rebound and had himself a nice day. I still think there's some things to like there. Obviously, it was disappointing. He came in at 6'1 instead of 6'3, which is so weird that we do things like that. Like with quarterbacks, I get it, right? You know, listed at 6'1, comes in at 5'9. I get it. But like 6'3 to 6'1 for a wide receiver, he still came in at over 220 pounds. Still, when you get him in open space, you can still see the athleticism he has. But for someone like him, or just your overall thoughts on Leggett.
I was lower than probably consensus on Xavier Leggett, like entering Mobile. I wasn't extremely high on him. I think he's got some parts or pieces to his game that are good. Like you'll see physicality after the catch. I think he's very inconsistent with his route running. He's very inconsistent as far as his footwork and gearing down and releases off the line and stuff like that. So those are a lot of parts to his game that he's going to have to, really work on some things at the NFL level. And for Leggett, you hit the nail on the head, Cody. He had a terrible day one. Like he looked slow. He looked clunky in and out of his breaks on day one. And I was talking to this with the guys, everybody that was down there for FP, Thor, myself, Mike Mayer, our content director and stuff, Eric Froton did some stuff for us down there. We're all talking in the stands. And I'm like, dude, I think Leggett's like not fully healthy because he entered. So on day one, they have all the gauntlet stuff, like the agility stuff. Guys will warm up. They'll do, breakdown, go around cones and stuff like that. All the guys are going full bore. Leggett was not. And it's not one of those things, like, obviously he wants to freaking show out. He's not going to go half speed if he's fully healthy. But the other part about that is he had a compression sleeve over his left lower leg the entire week. And then we saw on day three, he goes out with an injury, and it was reported as an ankle. Who knows what it actually was. But he did leave day three with an injury and then just kind of watched the rest of practice. So I'll give it to Leggett. Like, I don't think he was fully healthy in Mobile. I think he gutted it out and tried to help himself as much as he could. Now, it wasn't cold down there, but it wasn't exactly like warm and sunny. It wasn't like 80 degrees and stuff. So whether it's a calf, whether it's anything else, soft tissue that was bothering him and it wasn't an ankle, then it makes a little bit more sense because he was slow. He did not look like the guy that I had seen on film on day one. But then he comes back on day two. He looks cleaner in and out of his break. He's getting separation on a more consistent basis. You know, day two is what you wanted to see out of him if you were a truther, if you're a believer in the skill set. And day two is what I wanted to see out of him to prove me wrong. You know, so I'm still kind of up and down on him. I still think that he's probably going to garner a lot of hype. He's probably going to get test decent. But looking at his overall analytical profile and some of the other parts and pieces of, just his week in Mobile, I kind of exit Mobile with how I entered. I'm like, I'm probably not going to be as high on as consensus is on him. And that's fine. You know, we all have to take a stand on players and what we think about them.
Was there anybody that you were going into the process that you were higher on that you came away lower on? Oh,
man. Jacob Cowing. Like, he's the easy answer. I was sky high on Jacob Cowing entering the process and really liked his tape. I wanted to see, because if you look at his overall profile and how he was used in college, first 2 years, downfield receiver, high A-dot, and then the final 2 years, they neutered him. They dropped his A-dot, used him in the slot, didn't use him downfield. He took a backseat to other wide receivers at Arizona, and he had a really rough week. As a guy that I'm going to have to go back and re-amend my evaluation, because literally in the first line or two lines, first snippet of my eval for him in my primer for Senior Bowl was he can play the outside. And now I walk out of Mobile and I'm like, he cannot play the outside at the NFL. He had a rough week. Corners were able to get their hands on him, push him off his routes. And for a guy that I was hoping he was going to enter Mobile and be able to have footwork and speed and be able to overcome the size questions about him, which those size questions just got even louder in Mobile. Those questions got turned up to 11, not only in his performance or lack thereof in Mobile, but also because he's a guy in college. Well, we talked about this, guys. He was listed at 5'11", 175, and he goes down there and he weighs in and he measures at 5'8", 165. And you're just like, well, shit. Okay. Well, now you go from, we think you can win at that size, to now you're even smaller. I'm watching you in practice and you're not as explosive as I was hoping for. And once corners get their hands on you, you don't have an answer for, and you don't have the raw speed nor the tactician skills to be able to beat press, or sometimes just to beat like physicality through a route, like a corner like bumping you in the middle of your route and you're seeing him get jammed up. And I'm like, well, shit. Like, I literally, just to let you know, the 180 that I pulled on him, and we're talking about like entering the process versus leaving the process. Jacob Cowing, like how I ranked the Senior Bowl wide receivers entering Mobile, he was my wide receiver too going down there. Leaving Mobile, let me pull this up right now. Jacob Cowing was my wide receiver. He was the third worst wide receiver for me. Like, only Malachi Corley and Aeneas Smith were ranked lower for me. So I don't want to sound like I just took like absolutely just burying the guy, but we talked about this earlier. How do you weigh that? For a guy that I needed to remain high on him, I needed him to answer the questions about, can you overcome size and your limitations with the other bags of tricks that you have, or the other skills that you have, whether it's footwork, route running, speed, all those things. Can you overcome your size? He can't.
Dude, you gotta talk to me about Malachi Corley. He's someone who I didn't see anything good or bad about him in terms of his Senior Bowl, but he was someone who I really liked. I thought it was a fun watch with his with that Hilltopper tape. Why so low on him?
He's not the next Deebo Samuel. That's what I heard. I heard he was
the next Deebo Samuel. Oh, good Lord. No. And that is so dismissive to Deebo Samuel. I've heard that too, and I'm like, we're watching different guys. Like,
I saw that too before I watched him, and I didn't come away with that, but like, I thought the way that he was used kind of mimicked the way that like Jaden Reed was used this year with the Packers. It's kind of like what I thought was like a better comp versus Deebo.
So the thing with Corley is that I look at him as being kind of a dime a dozen kind of guy. If you look at how he was used at Western Kentucky, the reason the Deebo stuff gets brought up, and he's got a really good analytical profile, but again, we're talking about you marry the numbers with the film. I wasn't like just blown away by his film. Like, I look at him, he's a manufactured touch guy. He's built kind of short and squatty like a running back. And so, yes, people are going to sit here and say Deebo Samuel. Like, I look at him as being like a poor man's Rondale Moore is the way that I look at Malachi Corley. Like, I don't think Malachi Corley, like when you translate a lot of the things that he was asked to do in college to the NFL, like, is he going to be able to produce the same amount of yak? Is he going to break tackles? Is he going to have, does he have the raw ability to produce as well after the catch as he did in college? And that's my biggest problem with Malachi Corley. I don't think he can. And because I don't think he's going to test like amazingly well. Like, I think he's going to test okay, but I don't think he's going to just blow it out and you're like, oh shit, like, look at this guy. You know, I don't see that coming from Malachi Corley. I think that some of his numbers were helped by the level of competition that he played. I think that if you put him, like, whenever we saw him in Senior Bowl, I wasn't impressed that much by his route running. I was able to see corners, like, we're able to jam him up at certain points. And I know that he got voted, you know, whatever, bell of the ball. Like, I know that, you know, the players voted him that. Like, I take that with a grain of salt. Like, I don't give a crap. Like, you know, you could tell me, like, it doesn't matter who got voted what at Mobile. That doesn't matter to me at all. Like, I don't care. I just don't look at Malachi Corley as his skill set transitioning to the NFL and being a guy that's going to consistently garner and earn targets and be able to win in the same way that he's won in college at the NFL level.
Got it. Last two guys I want to ask you about, just real quick, just brief thoughts on them before we jump over to tight ends and wrap this up.
Okay.
But just any thoughts on Devontae Walker? I know I heard the Scarecrow comment earlier, and that really broke my heart. I have him in a deep, deep Devy league that I picked up last year. And, you know, I just box score scouting, you know, crushed at Kent State, obviously had some big blow-up games with UNC as well. But I did see that he was kind of similar to Cowing in the sense of, like, if DBs got their hands on him, he just disappeared from that play. So, Devontae Walker, is there any hope for him at all? And then Jamari Thrash as well.
No, I don't have a lot of hope for Tez Walker. I look at Tez Walker as the skills that he has is exactly the skills that I saw in Mobile, and he's an inconsistent route runner. You look at a guy that, like, whether it's gearing down on short area routes, earning separation early or late in that aspect, he struggles with that. He struggles with physicality from corners. He struggles with drops. Like, he had spots in Mobile where it was either a slant over the middle or in traffic or a contested situation, and he either would drop it or he wasn't getting open. But God damn it, Cody. But like with Tez Walker, I just look at, he's a situational deep threat. Unfortunately, he's a guy that I think could have benefited. And I know he had a lot of the stuff with the NCAA, probably wasn't realistic for him to go back to college. Think that he would have benefited from another year in college. But I think he's a guy that he's going to get overhyped. I think he's probably going to test well. I think that people are going to look at his game and say, what could he be instead of what is he right now? And I have big concerns about who he is right now as a player and consistently winning in the NFL. Like, I just look at him as being, to me, he's a round four, round five guy. He's a situational deep threat. If he ever becomes more than that, I mean, kudos to him. I just don't project it. Jamari Thrash, I like him a lot. I mean, again, we talk about these guys and saying, okay, how do we project you to the NFL? What is going to be your role? What are teams going to ask you to do, and how do you win? I think there's a good bucket of two to three different guys I'll mention here, and you could put all these guys in the same type of bucket, Cody, in the sense that, can they be serviceable slot wide receivers in the NFL? Can they win underneath? Can they beat zone? Can they be a reasonable wide receiver three or four on an NFL depth chart for a number of years? You could say that about Jamari Thrash. You could say that about Luke McCaffrey. You could also say that about Marcus Rosemee-Jacksaint, who I think if we're looking at all of these guys, Rosemee-Jacksaint is the guy that's going to come in. He's a lunch pail guy. He's the guy that's going to come in. And I really think he's going to surprise people and have like this 8 or 9 year career in the NFL, be a consistent wide receiver four in a depth chart, because coaches, this is not going to score us fantasy points, but that dude blocks his ass off. He has been top 15 in PFF run blocking amongst wide receivers for each of the last 3 years. Coming from a big program and stuff, I think all three of those guys are going to be serviceable NFL wide receivers. Probably not guys that we're going to ever talk about and be like, okay, they're top 36 wide receivers in fantasy every year. Maybe they're streaming options, but I think they're going to be really good NFL players. They're going to be good pros. Just they're probably not going to put up the box score stuff that we care about in fantasy.
I think the only other guy that I guess you didn't talk about was Ricky Parasol. He's another guy that I felt like a lot of people brought up.
He had a good week. Yeah, he had a really good week. I think so. Again, marrying the week versus the profile, Ricky Parasol's profile is rough. Like, we're talking about a guy in 2023, 86th in yards per route run, 53rd in receiving grade, 131st, and this is all wide receivers with at least 50 targets, 131st in yak per reception. So Pearsall's not a guy that I think is going to just wow us and blow us away and stuff in the sense of, like, his production in the NFL. He had a really damn good week, though, and he looked like the guy that I thought he was coming into the process. The thing about Ricky Pearsall is you can hang your hat knowing that he can do two things extremely, extremely well. And those are the trump cards of his game. He's a very damn good route runner, Thor got a chance to sit here and interview him at Media Day. And he, I mean, just listening to him talk about route running, setting up corners, things like that. Also giving a shout out to his dad, like, you know, helping him with eye-hand coordination, like basically tossing him balls when he was like, you know, at school age kid. Ricky Pearsall is really good at route running and he's damn good at the catch point. That guy has some of the sickest damn catches on his college film that you will ever watch. There's one particular catch, and I think it was versus Charlotte, that he had this just monstrous catch, like a one-hander over his damn head in traffic where you're just like, oh, shit. Well, he caught that? But you saw those types of moments in Mobile. He made a few really nice catches, showed off the route running chops. I just think Ricky Pearsall is a guy that if you marry the analytical profile, which I think really his analytical profile speaks to the fact of, I think he's an okay athlete, but I don't think that he's a special athlete. So I think that if you're looking at a limiting factor off of a guy that I think is a very polished prospect, he's a good route runner. All the scouts, or at least what he imparted to us, is that a lot of NFL teams are looking at him as a slot option. Can he develop and be a wide receiver three and a good slot option for an NFL team? Yes. Is he ever going to be a guy where we're talking about just he's blowing up in fantasy? I don't think so. But would that shock me that he has, you know, a Marvin Jones type of year one year? And that's not a perfect comp. But like talking like, could Pearsall walk into like an 800 receiving yard, 8 touchdown season? And we're talking about him as a flash in the pan kind of guy? Yeah, I think he definitely could do that.
Last wide receiver, just because, sorry, because you brought up the dad helping thing. It's just someone I saw a bunch of split.
You're going to bring up Brendan Rice? We're going to talk about Brendan Rice. Yeah.
Just quick thought on Brendan Rice.
Yeah, for everybody out there, yes, Brendan Rice is Jerry Rice's son. Jerry Rice was a Mobile. Jerry Rice was also very, very awesome. He talked to a ton of guys, both in the industry and stuff, like on the sideline. Super nice guy. But Brendan Rice, I think Brendan Rice is who Brendan Rice is. Brendan Rice is a tall drink of water. He's physical through his routes, but he doesn't have a trump card asset where you're like, can he win at the NFL level against guys that can run with him and guys that can get physical with him? A lot of how you saw Brendan Rice win his reps in Mobile was a lot of upper body strength, a lot of fighting through physical coverage and stuff like that, and whether it's on whip routes or, you know, dealing with contested situations. He's not a guy that is going to win early and easy separation in the NFL. Like, if anything, you're looking at a guy that he's going to have to win at the catch point. He's going to have to win and have the ability to late separate in his routes, because he doesn't have, like, he's got size, but he doesn't have like the special footwork at that size or special burst or speed. Like, there's not a special quality to Brendan Rice to where you put him up against NFL corners that can also run with him and bump and run with him. That's a guy that I think is going to struggle to earn consistent separation. Is he going to have probably some times where he has a good game or they match him up, like maybe they motion him into the slot and he gets on a nickel where he can show off that he's stronger than this dude? Then yes, I think that's possible, but I don't look at the ceiling's not high for Brendan Rice. I look at Brendan Rice as being like a wide receiver four in an NFL depth chart.
All right, let's jump over to the tight ends. And was there anybody that stood out for you at tight ends?
Cody's alluding to the guy who won the week, man. Theo Johnson easily had the best week amongst all these tight ends. I think this tight end group was very, I'm not going to say lackluster, but as far as guys where we're like projecting that they test out the gym, that they have these elite upside type of players in the NFL, none of those guys fit that bill. None of them. Can Theo Johnson had the best week out of all those guys. He consistently won in one-on-ones. He caught damn near everything that came to him. Again, I don't want to get over the moon with him because he's also a guy that over the last 2 years didn't rank any better than 29th in PFF receiving grade or yards per route run amongst tight ends with at least 20 targets. So I think his ceiling from a physical standpoint is a little bit capped. He's a guy who I think probably tests decently well in short area stuff. Nothing that blows him again, like nothing crazy where he just blows out the gym, and probably runs about a 4.7. Are those serviceable marks to where he can develop into a very solid, safe third, fourth option, tertiary option in an offense that can beat zone coverage and he could be an underneath guy? Yes. I don't think that he has the raw speed and the ability to like threaten down the seam. So I think that his upside in the NFL is probably capped. He's probably going to be a much better NFL player than he is for fantasy. Fantasy purposes, I'd say Ben Sinnott, or however you say it, Sinnott. I kept butchering the poor kid's name the whole freaking week. But I think that he's the guy that if we're going to look towards the fantasy angle for any one of these tight ends, he's the guy that kind of stands out to me. And I push back about this whole thing about like people kept talking about the entire week with him. Like, is he going to be an H-back? I don't think he's going to be an H-back. Was he used in that quality in college? Yes. But that's only because he can block his ass off, man. He can really freaking block. And you saw some of that same usage out of Pat Freiermuth when he came out as a prospect. Penn State put him as the lead blocker and just asked him to go maul people and steal souls on multiple running plays. And the same thing can be said for him. So Sinnott is a guy that, like, my comp for him coming out was Dalton Schultz. I think that he could develop into being a trusted option in the passing game. And he's honestly the guy that if we want to peg any one of these guys for fantasy upside, he's the guy that I would mention because, again, we're talking about the analytical profile. 2023 amongst all tight ends with at least 20 targets, he was 10th in yards per route run, 9th in PFF receiving grade. And I also want to work in one more guy here who I feel like was one of the most disappointing guys of the week for me, Jaheim Bell. I just – bad week. All way around bad week. And when I say bad week, I want to quantify this. Did he win his routes? Did he win certain one-on-one reps? Did he look okay in team drills? Yes. In that sense, he did not face plant. Where Jaheim Bell comes up shortest, and I don't want to really make a pun there, but I did. As a guy who was listed in college at 6'2", 6'3", he measured in at 6'1". He's a tweener guy now off of that measurement. You're not going to play consistent inline snaps or be an every down tight end in the NFL level at freaking 6'1", especially when you don't have that type of trump card athleticism. It's like, okay, fine. Could you be a big slot? Could you be a move tight end at 6'1" if you're like a damn mega athlete and you can create after the catch? Jaheim Bell's a guy when I mean, look, entering Mobile, he was the guy for fantasy purposes I really, really wanted to see and I was so enamored with because if you look at his profile, I mean, the guy, the numbers jump off the freaking page. Like in two of the last three seasons, he's been top 20 in both yards per route run and receiving grade. In each of the last 3 years, amongst all tight ends with at least 20 targets, he's ranked inside the top 12 in every single year over the last 3 years. He's been top 12 in yak per reception and missed tackles forced. So I was like, well, shit, is he going to be like Jonnu Smith? Is he going to be a guy where maybe he has some move tight end? He's fantasy viability. And then he goes in and he measures at 6'1", and I'm like, oh! And then he goes out there and he looks okay, but he doesn't look explosive or sudden in his routes. And you're just like, okay, never mind. I'm out.
Well,
Kev, did I just like bust your Jaheim Bell bubble? Like, I mean, you look very distraught.
No, I mean, I don't think the tight ends, it's like there's a couple guys in my mind.
Yeah, they were okay, not great. I think it was a very kind of grouping of tight ends this year, to be honest. Better NFL players than they're going to be in fantasy.
Last thing before we get out of here, I feel like every year for the past, like, 4 to 5 years, there's been like a small school offensive lineman who's just an absolute mauler who comes out of nowhere, who ends up getting pushed up into like early day two type of draft capital.
Oh, you're talking about the Cody Mock corollary? Yeah.
I feel like we didn't have that this year. Was there anyone? No. I did see some JPJ love, but yeah, obviously he's coming out of Oregon. Was there no other like small school lineman this year?
No, I mean, as far as the whole small school factor, I didn't see any small school linemen. I saw the JPJ Love. He looked good in one-on-ones. I didn't watch a ton of the defensive guys and the offensive line guys. He's the guy that did stand out to me in drills that I saw. But really, as far as like small school guys, there really wasn't a lot of like just small school in general. The only small school guy, just if we want to look like the entire umbrella of small school guys, the only name I'll bring up out of all the small school guys, just all the positions all overall, is Isaiah Davis. Coming out of South Dakota State, which we could call, you know, that's Pierre Strong University. You want to talk all that Tucker Craft University or Dallas Goedert University, all the same place. Isaiah Davis had a really good week. He looked really explosive. He's got the size. Like he's 6'2", 220-ish, 230-ish, somewhere around there. So he's a guy that I could see like working his way into like the early down thumper part of a committee. A guy that showed more explosiveness, good physicality through his runs, and honestly more smoothness in his pass game routes than I gave him credit coming out of South Dakota State. So out of any small school guys, he actually made some noise in Mobile.
Shout out Alex Kappa too.
Yeah, sorry. Excuse me, Alex Kappa. I should have led off with that name, Cody. I'm sorry.
I heard
Trey Lance University too. We can go there.
I mean, I heard Darius Robinson just crushed it. Chris Haven's Drain just crushed it. You know, it's pretty much Mizzou down there, just showing out all weekend.
Oh, just all Mizzou. Yeah.
Yep. Javon Foster as well.
You should have just come down there and done just a straight Mizzou podcast, man. Where you at? Like, where you at?
I should have. Next year, I'll get my credentials. I'll be down there.
You should. Be a good time, man.
It does sound like a good time. So I guess I guess we could live off of this, but like, so when you get down there and everything, like, it feels like it's also like a lot of networking going on.
Yeah.
In the evenings, I'd assume you go tie one on, maybe have some drinks, whatever. is that correct?
Yeah, it's very correct, dude. So I love Senior Bowl every single year. It's a wonderful and it's a tiring experience. It is the entire week. It's fly in, stay out till about 1 or 2 a.m. Usually you're closing down Veets, which is like the local watering hole, or one of the other bars. And whether it's this year, not as much. Like, there's been previous years where like I'm sitting at the bar, you know, however many drinks deep, talking to whether it's scouts. Last year I was talking to multiple coaches from the Carolina Panthers and their secondary. You're sharing Ubers. Shout out to Ray G. I think he shared an Uber flying in there with Mike Vrabel to Mobile. So, I mean, dude, it's a really great week. You meet a lot of high-profile people, whether it's oh God, just name dropping here. 2 or 3 years ago, met Dan Marino in passing in the hotel, and I was like, "Oh shit, it's Dan Marino! It's Dan Marino!" Had to stop and do like the fanboy thing, get the picture, and you know, have the moment and stuff. So it's a really good networking opportunity. I mean, you meet everybody from whether it's NFL media personalities to scouts, agents, players, positional coaches. Deuce Staley, watching him get hit on by a lot of the local folk in Mobile was a lot of fun. That was great, especially at 2 a.m. But no, man, it's a really fun week. As much fun. I mean, it's kind of one of those like work weeks where it's like work hard, play hard, you know. So you're out to 2, 3 a.m. at the bars, you're up at 7 a.m., you know, getting ready to hit practice and stuff the very next day. So by the time I come home, usually on Fridays from Senior Bowl the last few years, I'm sunburnt and I'm tired as hell, and I just want to take a full day long nap.
I don't blame you. Well, you're out there doing the Lord's work, you know, getting all this information.
Trying, baby. So, trying.
Yeah, we appreciate it. We appreciate you joining us. Yeah, I didn't say one negative thing about you this show. I
mean, no, you didn't. What, did you hop off the show a little bit earlier just so you wouldn't say something negative to me? Because, I mean, I felt like that was a self-imposed timeout, Kev.
Well, I mean, there was so much talk about Cody Schrader. I really had to, you know, I was getting a little hot, a little bothered, you know.
Well, I noticed you came back. Are you wearing any pants now? I mean,
I wasn't
know,
wearing pants to begin with. I don't know what we're talking about. That, but yeah, so, I mean, you're more than welcome on Thursday night if you have no plans. You know, we're doing the DFS showdown Super Bowl slate with Maddie. You have nothing going on. You're more than welcome. Then I'm sure there I'll tell you your name.
Okay. Okay. All right. Marking it down on the old calendar.
Well, that's good because that's our next show. We got that on Thursday night, the DFS show. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Even Cody, if you want to jump on, you know, we can talk. I think we'll probably talk some props and stuff because, you know, there's not a lot to talk about with Showdown. So just kind of make it a whole thing, you know. For the last game of the year.
You can bet, you know, colors of Gatorade, how long the anthem is, depending on what state you're in. Can we get an over-under on how many nude laps that Kev runs around his neighborhood if the Chiefs win? I'm setting the line. I'm going to do with a hook, 2.5.
National anthem, I don't know how long that is.
Under?
You don't think he's going to make 2.5 laps around the neighborhood before the police get him? I think he's got more wheels than that, Cody. Come on.
I think Kev has one good lap in him, and then he's
Oh, and then he's wheezing in his front yard, about to throw up.
Yeah. That's it.
That's probably fair.
Hammering me under.
Well, I mean, okay. Let's quantify this. Nude laps around the neighborhood, but you can wear shoes. I mean, you know. Like just the only thing you're wearing is a pair of high top Nikes, you know?
It's just Crocs. Put them in the
put them in sport mode.
Yeah.
God damn it.
No, if it's Crocs, I'll take the over. Anything else under.
The whole neighborhood sitting like somebody is sitting in their living room. It goes to commercial, and all you hear outside is Kev running nude laps around the neighborhood, and all you hear is those Crocs are working overtime, baby. All you hear is squeaking the whole night.
You probably also hear the balls slapping against the
I wasn't gonna go there.
I was back and forth in my head. I'm like, am I gonna say this? Should I say
he went there? Oh, he went there. That man went there.
Oh. Anyways, Jesus. Yeah, we'll be doing that Thursday
on
night,
that note.
So, yeah.
Yeah, on that note, let's professionally transition out of it.
So anyways, D-Bro, as always, appreciate you coming on, talking with us, giving us some good information for, you know, the Senior Bowl. We'll definitely have to get you back on at some point so we can do our annual meet.
Oh, the annual how my ranks are stupid and Kev's are better? Yes, we have to do that for dynasty purposes and prospects. We have to.
Yeah. So we'll do that. So appreciate it. And I guess we'll see you Thursday night. So just come back here for the big Super Bowl extravaganza around here for the last showdown and, you know, talk some player props, some bets there. So I've seen somebody drop like $35,000 on Isaiah Pacheco being the first touchdown scorer. So paid out like $980,000. I'm like, I wish I could have that kind of money. You could just throw it out.
I was going to say, Kev's going to have a new house.
Bet. All day. So, anyways, all right, let's go ahead and get out of here. I hope everybody has a good night. We'll be back in Thursday. See you then. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.